Peace be with you. Friends, today is the great feast of Epiphany, this manifestation of Christ to the nations. The Magi, representatives of another great religious tradition, come to Christ and they open for Him their treasures, and then they go back by a different route. What I want to do is take this opportunity to reflect on an issue which has intrigued the church from the beginning. An issue at the very heart of our celebration today. And that is the relationship between Christianity and the other great religions of the world. As I say, it's a very old problem. Even in the New Testament itself, you can see it. Paul, for example, in the letter to the Romans, reflects passionately on the relationship between Christianity and the mother faith of Judaism. The church fathers, very early on, wrestle with this question as the church moves out into the Hellenistic and Roman world. And then up and down the centuries, we can see it. Theologians and pastors and scholars and popes wrestling with this issue. How do we relate to the other great faith traditions of the world? Why is it a problem? Well, Christianity claims to be the final and definitive revelation of God and God's purposes and God's will. So how do we relate to these other claims to be important, if not definitive, revelations of God? Do we fight them? Do we convert them? Do we listen to and learn from them? Do we ignore them? All those options, by the way, have been tried up and down the centuries. That last one, ignore them, has always been pretty unrealistic from the beginning. But especially today, when the world has grown so small because of communications, and because since September 11th, this issue of the dialogue with world religions has come very much to the fore. So what do we say? What I'm going to lead to both today and next week, because this topic is so broad, I want to spend two homilies talking about it. What I want to lead to is that the journey of the Magi and the image of the three kings gives us a very good hint as to the right solution to this problem. But let me get at it this way. I think there are two great extremes to be avoided. I'll talk about one this week and the second one next week. The first great extreme to be avoided in this question is what I might call a maximalist and exclusivist interpretation of Christianity. By this I mean the claim that Christianity is exclusively and uniquely the right religion. We are the bearers of God's revelation, and all other religious traditions are false. Pseudo-religions, simulacra of the truth, but basically false. This position tends to take on, as you might guess, a rather violent overtone of sharp opposition to the other religions. Can you hear it up and down the centuries? Yes, there have been advocates of this position in almost every age of the church's life. Though I must say, in recent years, it's become more muted within Catholicism. But you know, you can hear overtones of this position in certain more evangelical, fundamentalist Protestants. You know, in the wake of September 11th, Franklin Graham, who was the son of the great Billy Graham, referred to Islam as a evil and wicked religion. There you can hear a bit of this maximalist and exclusive position. Now, there's another extreme position on the other pole. Also, I'm going to argue, to be avoided. And this one, I would say, has been much more prominent in Catholic circles in, let's say, the last 35 or 40 years. This I might call a minimalist and radically inclusivist position. It goes something like this, and I bet you will find this language familiar because it's all over the popular culture. Hey, all religions are basically the same. We're all spiritual seekers, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, Christians. We're all climbing the sacred mountain by different paths, but we'll all get to the same point. it doesn't really matter in the end which religion you espouse, because they're all deep down the same. Now, this position, too, I think, is an extreme, and one that Christians cannot espouse. In fact, I'm going to say our great tradition moves really between these two extremes. Now, let me say now in more detail what's problematic about this first option, the exclusivist and maximalist position. It simply won't hold for this basic reason. There are far too many points of contact between our Christian faith and the other great faiths of the world. If I were to say, for example, Judaism or Islam or Buddhism are simply evil, wicked religions, the problem is I would have to say, to be coherent, that much in my own religion is evil and wicked, because there are so many family resemblances, so many points of contact between them. Let me just give you the slightest sketch of this. Consider first Judaism, the mother religion, the mother faith from which Christianity has emerged. Pope John Paul II has said that Jews are our elder brothers and sisters in the faith. Quite right. They came to the faith first. They were the people with whom God made the special covenant, which was fulfilled, we claim, in Christianity. As a result, there is a massive congruence between Judaism and Christianity. Both believe in a personal creator God who sustains and governs the universe. Both believe that God has communicated through revelation with his people, has made special covenants with them, calls them to friendship. All of this Christianity and Judaism hold in common. How about Islam, this newly controversial religion in wake of recent political events? Again, there are huge points of commonality between Islam and Christianity. If you look at the Quran, and many Christians I know find this surprising, much of the Quran is overlapping with both the Old Testament and the New Testament. Many of the prophets and patriarchs and kings of the Old Testament are revered and mentioned in the Quran. And even the New Testament, there are many points of contact. Jesus is profoundly reverenced by Islam, as is Mary, his mother. In fact, here's a curious point. Mary is mentioned more frequently in the Quran than she is in the New Testament. Islam holds to a personal creator God who sustains and governs the universe. Islam holds to a God who speaks revelation to his people and who is calling his people to a life beyond this one. In all these ways and many others, Islam comes together with Christianity. Here's a curious detail told to me by Father David Burrell. He's a professor at Notre Dame, who's an expert in the Islamic Christian dialogue. He said that an Islamic scholar once told him that the whole first part of the Summa Theologiae of St. Thomas Aquinas, which is the greatest masterpiece in Christian theology, much of the first part of the Summa, this scholar said, would be seen by Muslims as a very powerful commentary on the Quran. When Thomas talks about God, God's existence, God's nature, God's simplicity, God's eternity, God's power, with all of that, a good Muslim would be in profound agreement. How about Buddhism? Buddhism has a rich tradition of monasticism, of mysticism, contemplation, and prayer. In fact, in recent years, Christian monks and Buddhist monks have come together. And they do talk about theology, but more to it, they practice their faiths together and find enormous points of contact and congruence in their spiritual style. One of the great masters of the Christian tradition, whom I've often mentioned, is Thomas Merton. Merton, you know, in the last part of his life, established a very vibrant contact with Buddhism. Hinduism, this wildly rich and complex religious tradition, like Catholicism, has a very rich, complicated theology. More to it, The ultimate deity, reverenced by Hindus, is portrayed according to three forms or three faces. Many have seen a link even to the Christian doctrine of the Trinity. More to it, Hindus believe that the divine principle is available in and through all things. It's a bit like the sacramental imagination that Catholic Christians have. I mentioned Merton vis-a-vis the Buddhists. One of the greatest examples of the Christian-Hindu dialogue would be Bede Griffiths, an English Benedictine monk who spent much of his life in India in dialogue with Hinduism. My point in mentioning all of these points of contact, all these family resemblances, is to rule out that extreme and maximalist position that says simply, we're right and they're wrong. Christians Vatican II affirmed it in many ways and in many of its texts, that there are lights, rays of light, elements of truth in all the great religions of the world, and that the attitude of the Catholic Christian ought to be to look first to those. Don't look first to the points of demarcation. I'll mention those next week. But look first to these many and powerful points of contact. Something Cardinal George has said, which has always stayed in my mind, he said it in regard to the ecumenical conversation among Christians, but it applies here too, in this world religion dialogue. Cardinal George said, the Catholic Christian Church, we believe, has all the gifts that Christ wants His people to have. But it doesn't mean that other Christian churches might practice certain of the gifts better than we do. So, on this grander scale, would we say that Catholic Christianity has the fullness of truth that God wants His people to have? Yes. That's what it means to say we are the definitive revelation. But that doesn't rule out for a moment that other great religions might practice certain of these gifts better than we do. Therefore, can we learn from Judaism? Yes. The way their scholars and mystics and poets have wrestled with what we call the Old Testament, we can learn from them. Can we learn from Muslims? Yes. About the unity of God. About the submission that we all owe to God. Yes, indeed. Can we learn from the Buddhists? Well, we have been for the past many centuries in their techniques of prayer, their deep tradition of mysticism and contemplation. Can we learn from Hindus? Yes. About this rich sense of the divine presence in and through all things. So, a maximalism is ruled out. Like the three kings, members of another religious tradition who brought their treasures to Christ, so the many religions of the world can be seen as bringing the treasure of their belief, the treasure of their art and architecture, the treasure of their religious practice to Christ. Next week I'll say more about this, the other side of the question. But for now, let's exult in the fact that we have so much in common with the other great religions of the world. And God bless you.